So what I want to do first of all is talk a little bit about the project and the sort of significance of austerity in the project itself as I see it. And then to talk a little bit about the two theological tasks that the project has set itself. And I think we've been introduced to the first theological task already. And then I want to explore the second theological task, which I think part of the project is developing a political theology in the context of austerity. And that's my particular interest. So something by way of introduction about the project, and then to kind of recap on some of the findings in relation to theological inquiry in the context of austerity. And then to try and find some way of responding to Chris and Stephanie's challenges from the top of the morning. And if I'm able to work in some responses to Sarah Marie Hall's and Rachel Muir's contributions, that would be great. I ain't promising that. There are some overlaps, but I'm kind of struggling to process all this at the present time. And I'm aiming to be done by 12:15. Anyway, our core aim is to analyse the nature, scope and impact of Christian engagement with urban poverty in the UK in the context of austerity since the 2008 financial crisis. And we offer the project offers a gloss on austerity, you know, and Stephanie spoke about this at the top of the morning, that austerity is an economic policy to reduce government debt by reducing government spending. But it's not just an economic policy. And she talked a little bit more about personal austerity and historical or romanticized austerity this morning. Austerity also affects people's daily lives. So we want to explore, I think, what in other contexts we've called the relational aspects of poverty, that it's not possible to give a fully theological account of it if we can't identify and appraise austerity as a policy without attention to its effects on people. And if we're going to talk about people, we're going to need to talk about actors and institutions that both direct austerity and seek to redirect or mitigate it. And I thought that was kind of really helpful about Sarah's talk earlier, that she was exploring the relational aspect in relation to life course biographies and future families and reproductive rights, but was also trying to, I found it really helpful to kind of have some vocabulary for thinking about, you know, what are the vectors of austerity, so to speak, as a policy, and the language of social infrastructure strikes me as being interesting in that regard. And of course, there could be social infrastructures that deliver austerity, so to speak, but also social infrastructure that mitigates or resists. So I'm sure part of what the project will want to do is explore sites of resistance, both practically, so to speak, and just to pick up something from Rachel's talk, you know, theology as a site of resistance, but also I suppose theology is a kind of site of disloyalty and betrayal, and you know, kind of finding ways of exploring the relationship between those two strikes me as being important. One of the things that Stephanie has been doing is conducting interviews with church leaders, and one of the findings is the developing of a kind of theological vocabulary for churches to explore their response to austerity. So it's been interesting. I mean, from my point of view, it's been interesting to note how perhaps individuals, communities, groups, churches, not directly affected by austerity, but indirectly so, deploying a theological vocabulary in order to kind of capture this indirect impact. And I think that leads on to the first of our theological tasks, which is trying to explore the different sorts of theologizing that have developed in Christian responses to austerity over the last 12 years. And it's the work of Stephanie and Chris and Robert especially that's drawn these distinctions between, and their emphases, and I absolutely take those the point that Chris was making. You know, these are kind of fluid characterizations about caring and campaigning and prospering, as I put it. So in an important paper underway, Stephanie and Chris are talking about campaigning, caring in relation to, for example, as Chris mentioned this morning, Christian involvement in food banks, campaigning about Christian activism engaging with justice over welfare, and prospering Christian activity founded upon enterprise and self-help. And clearly there's leakage across these categorizations, and there's leakage more widely as well, because I think some of the more mainstream denominations are picking up the entrepreneurial side of this characterization. So yes, there's all sorts of developments going on in front of our eyes, so to speak. This threefold analysis of caring and campaigning and prospering, the project will need to think about these three points in relation to the mission tasks of churches. The mission task to meet need on the one hand and to engage with structural inequality on the other. So it seems to me that proclaiming the gospel doesn't necessarily exclude, on the one hand, the meeting of immediate need. Which of these three do you think was a neighbour to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers in Luke 10, and working to secure changes in a society's structures? But seek the welfare of the city where I have sent you into exile, Jeremiah 29. But what the relationship is between these two mission tasks, meeting need on the one hand and addressing structural inequality on the other, strikes me as we'll need some teasing out by us. So to care in the context of inequality does not in itself, it seems to me, exclude a desire to make visible and challenge structures that generate such inequality. I think it's a different sort of question whether the churches have capacity, energy to do both, but that seems to me a different sort of issue. If that's the first theological step, I want to spend most of my time talking about the second, which is talking about political theology in the context of austerity, and that's my main interest. There is some work emerging here, so I think immediately of Charlie Pemberton's excellent 2020 book. It was published 2 or 3 months ago, with the title The Bread of Life in Broken Britain, Food Banks, Faith and Neoliberalism. And it seems to me, out of the context of the northeast of England and Christian churches supporting food banks, Pemberton makes some directly political points. So it's exemplary clarity, it seems to me, that Pemberton displays in saying, well, if poverty is a political issue, it's going to need some political responses. And he offers some. So he has a recommendation that there should be universal basic income introduced. His second political proposal actually is about the disestablishment of the Church of England. And a third is about food production, distribution and consumption. You know, so if we're going to do a political theology in the context of austerity, those are his three proposals. But he also begins to develop the theological side of it, partially around the sacraments. And I'm just going to quote a line from him. I mean, I think this is core to the theological case he wants to build. God is for life, the lives of others in all their fullness. When we're developing an account of political theology, where are we going to put the stress? We're going to put the stress on the political or on the theological. And it seems to me that the challenges that Chris and Stephanie introduced to us earlier stress the political, if I can put it this way. And I want to develop the theological side a little bit, whether there's already some theological interpretation of these challenges that we might build upon. So I think there are some existing discussions of poverty in theology. I'm thinking of the work of Leonardo Boff and Gustavo Gutierrez, and I would want to draw upon them, and I'll pick that up again in just a minute. The challenges they presented to us this morning seems to be are partly about discourse and partly about action, and I would want to say something about the church's action. And I think, you know, I'm addressing a group of folk who'll be able to speak with much more authority than I can about the church's action, and I think that would be important, and therefore the church as a theological topic, actually. And then talking about marginalized voices, actually, and clearly one of the tasks of the project is to hear those voices and find some way of representing them. And that seems to me to be a very important matter, that the project is not about a claim about other voices. It's actually going to find a way of representing other voices. Otherwise, I think we've just found, in a sort of ideological moment, a way of talking about not othering others in a kind of wider sort of arc, which precisely does that, others. And clearly we need to avoid that. So to their challenges, let me just see if I can extend the analysis a little bit. First of all, challenge one was about negotiating a plural cultural landscape and churches not acting unilaterally and being collaborative and what have you. And, well, I mean, it seems to me, addressing this audience, whom I cannot see, but I'm reliably sure by Microsoft Teams that you are, in fact, there. I mean, clearly there's a question about how you are in your places, those for whom this applies, already negotiating a plural cultural landscape. It seems to me there's quite a lot of interdenominational work that's going on. I mean, I was thinking about kind of Christian climate action and green Christian and church action on poverty, indeed, all sorts of interdenominational activity going on. So there's a kind of plurality of action going on there. So, you know, in a way, are Christian groups already forming a kind of third space? I do take with full seriousness Charlie Pemberton's point about establishment. And, you know, is establishment in England and establishment in Scotland, you know, ways actually, do these kind of infrastructural matters inhibit a collaborative work? And that's an interesting question. I think in order to explore that, we'd have to explore more fully what establishment is, because there are a number of ways of thinking about establishment. So certainly in England, the establishment of the Church of England, according to Hooker and according to Coleridge and according to Luke Bretherton, are not the same. And it seems to me that Bretherton's conversational model of establishment, you know, might support this whole notion of a plural cultural landscape. More cautiously, I think I'd want to add at this point that it seems to me there are other forces than the churches that are resisting a plural cultural landscape. And my example here is always Rowan Williams' contribution to the discussion about the status of Sharia in English law. And it seems to me to push back, if that was an example of an attempt to pluralise, so to speak, the extraordinary pushback against that from a wide range of sectors in our society suggests to me that plurality is not easily understood and is not necessarily widely appreciated by all sectors of society. The second point is the intersectional nature of poverty. And yes, I suppose here I just want to repeat the point about Leonardo Boff and Gustavo Gutierrez and their analyses of poverty. I mean, I think they were stung, the first generation liberation theologians were stung by questions raised about what appeared to be a rather monochrome account of poverty. And they developed rather richer accounts of poverty. So, you know, the term intersectional would not have been used by them. But I note in her dazzling book, Patricia Hill Collins talks about intersectional as a number of ways. She says you can talk about it as metaphor, you can talk about it as heuristic, you can talk about it as paradigm shift. And, you know, I think it'll be important for the project, I think. You might have views about that. How in practice, on the ground, actively, do we use the term intersectional? Do we use it kind of metaphorically as a way of kind of reminding ourselves about linkages? Do we use it heuristically to say, well, you know, we must be compelled to inquire, ask questions from multiple perspectives? Or do we think it's a whole new kind of epistemological route or something, and you know, these are kind of important matters? Clearly, I mean, just to pick up Rachel's point about apocalyptic as revealing, I thought that was kind of really interesting. So, you know, is apocalyptic part of theology's contribution to intersectionality? Would be a kind of might be a question. Then we had some issues to do with short-term need and long-term change. And I thought Rachel's points about Malthus and what have you were kind of really important here, because you getting some take on whether poverty is claimed to be necessary to the system. You know, poverty is a kind of necessary excretion of the system, so to speak, or whether it's a kind of contingent outcome strikes me as being really important. And theology, I think, has contributed to both sides of that. Is poverty a tragedy or is it a scandal? And deciding which of those two it is strikes me as being really important. And then finally, and then I'm going to stop because it's 12:14 and I'm stopping at 12:15. The whole issue to do with violence and cultural violence. And that is really interesting, but deeply problematic, I think, for political theology, because violence is a red flag term for political theology, I think, because it's associated with the work of Carl Schmitt. And there's a very large question here about whether the project, I think, wants to frame the conversation about poverty in relation to a framing in relation to violence and what's the contrast between violence? It's violence and peace, is it? Or something like that. This terminology has been deployed. Lyndon Johnson in 64, was it deployed? You know, I want to initiate a war on poverty in America. Is this helpful terms, and be interesting, is this a useful vocabulary? Be interesting to, or would people want to talk about, in a way, I thought Sarah Marie Hall was talking about this in relation to kind of reproductive rights and what have you. You know, would it be better to pair poverty in relation to something like freedom, and what restricts freedom, what inhibits freedoms, what coerces people? Would this be a better sort of would this be truer to the effects of poverty and its justification by austerity policy? And I suppose that would, but the reference to culture strikes me as being really interesting, and that just reminded me of Gutierrez again. Sorry to go on about Gustavo Gutierrez, but it just reminded me again that he has three understandings of poverty: the material, the spiritual, as I recall, and the evangelical. Now, all these are open to be distorted, and we focused on material poverty, and clearly the issue about spiritual poverty can be used, just as Rachel suggested, it has been used, in a contrast between the deserving and the undeserving. You know, it's a kind of new form of asceticism, but of course, some asceticisms are more damaging than others. I thought the cultural stuff, you know, the project will need to find some way of digesting, it seems to me. And on that note, it is 12:17 by my laptop. I shall stop. Thank you all very much. Seen and unseen.